determined that to be effective, this system must be based on biological ID. The U.S. Department of Justice must report back to Congress this November, and the legislation requires that the system be implemented within a month. Now, for a national system, I'm fairly confident that Congress is going to amend the bill and allow some lead time. However, in the foreseeable future, we are looking at a mechanism to identify at the point of purchase prohibited individuals. And thus, and it's going to be based on biological ID, such as a thumbprint. So requiring a thumbprint now is just, it's coming anyway. We're just doing it a little bit sooner. Law enforcement feels they need it. And for what gun owners get out of this bill, we feel that it's something that we can, it's a tool we are willing to give to law enforcement. Again, it's a very carefully balanced bill. There are some aspects that we don't like, there are aspects law enforcement doesn't like, but all in all, as I mentioned, most of the gun owners I've talked to feel it's a good bill. The NRA supports the bill, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Judy. Who's left?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Captain Leon Riggs, Marion County Sheriff's Office. I'm a police administrator and have been for a number of years. I was asked to serve on this committee, did so willingly, and as the others have testified, we have gone through a lot of material, a lot of pass-offs, and probably what I want to share with you today is the concern of the extended waiting period. That concern come about because, as an administrator, our record sections in law enforcement would receive the background information sheets on sales of handguns. The handgun may have been sold on Friday. The post office did not bring us the mail until the following Tuesday because of the delay of a weekend and perhaps a legal holiday attached on that Monday. That would give the records people short notice, if any notice at all, to try to do the background investigation. Many times we would receive these sales slips after the 5-day period had expired, sometimes as much as 3 days after the expiration date. If there was a discrepancy or we could not follow through on investigation, we had no opportunity to go back to the merchant for follow-up information. With the extended waiting period, we feel more comfortable in getting an adequate background investigation done. Part of the concern of the thumbprints comes under the same area that I'm addressing. That's the only method of positive identification we currently have. By using those prints, a person with false information given from an identification piece that the purchaser may have can be caught up with. Another reason for the extended time is gives us time for the state police, who will do the thumbprint research, and the local law enforcement officers who are doing the other background information to get their information together. Now keep in mind, even professionals do not always take good fingerprints the first time around. It may be necessary to go back to the originator and get yet another more clear fingerprint that the person doing that investigation will be able to check and be positive on. Another area that was addressed by Mr. Judy is the idea of the sawed-off or modified weapons. We do not have adequate law in Oregon to protect those people who from time to time have faced sawed-off shotguns. If you never have, I hope you never do. But right now, if a law enforcement officer in Oregon makes an arrest for a person who is carrying a sawed-off shotgun, there is no local law to cover it. It must go to federal jurisdiction, and prosecution under federal jurisdiction is extremely slow, difficult, if it occurs at all. So we're really looking forward to the idea that when we encounter these sawed-off weapons, as we sometimes do in law enforcement, you're going to give us a tool out of this to take immediate and proper action other than our immediate self-defense. Thank you.
Mr. Nichols.
Am I clean up?
You're the cleanup hitter on this group, I think.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Nichols. I'm the legislative chairman for the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 3470. As has been said before, this bill is a product of approximately 3 months of negotiations between the quote, gun lobby, representatives of law enforcement, and others. As such, it's a delicately balanced compromise which probably would not bear substantial amendment. Therefore, I urge HB 3470's adoption with only the technical amendments that have been submitted or will be submitted as they are developed. Subject to firearms legislation is an extremely emotional issue, and therefore it is perhaps inevitable that House Bill 3470 would become a controversial bill. Moreover, the situation has been aggravated by the fact that highly inaccurate reports of the bill's contents have been circulated both in the media and elsewhere. In fact, House Bill 3470 is not a gun control bill, rather it is a nut control bill. It is designed to filter out felons, mentally ill persons, drug addicts, and other potentially dangerous persons who attempt to purchase firearms through dealer channels. This is done by first defining in the statute precisely who is prohibited from possessing a firearm. Second, it makes it a crime for a prohibited person to attempt to purchase a firearm. And third, it provides for positive identification of firearms purchasers so the police can identify and filter out those prohibited persons. HB 3470 does nothing in the area of restricting the rights of law-abiding gun owners. In fact, it improves their position in that it, one, repeals ORS 166-440, which currently makes it a crime for one person to sell a handgun to another person if neither one of them is a firearms dealer. It repeals 166-430, which currently allows cities and counties to enact restrictive licensing requirements on firearms dealers. Instead, it provides that a federal firearms license is sufficient to do business. Third, it provides for uniform and reasonable statewide criteria on the model of the state of Washington for the issuance of concealed handgun licenses and requires the sheriff to issue permits to persons meeting those criteria. Four, it removes the current requirement that a permit is only good for one gun and simply licenses the person to carry any concealed handgun. Five, it provides for an informal, no-cost appeal process if the sheriff refuses to issue a permit. Six, it exempts concealed weapons permit holders from the handgun waiting period. Seven, it specifically prohibits the state police from establishing centralized registration of firearms or firearms owners. Yet, in spite of the beneficial changes proposed in House Bill 3470, the negative publicity of the bill has received has raised the stress level of a good many law-abiding gun owners unnecessarily. However, having personally talked to literally hundreds of gun owners over the past 3 months, I am convinced that in most cases, the heartburn goes away when they have actually read the bill. Most of the objections to House Bill 3470 arise from the identification requirement. Quite frankly, the idea that law-abiding citizens are required to furnish thumbprints and birth certificates to engage in perfectly legal activity is somewhat repugnant. However, considering the ease with which phony identification can be obtained and the number of bad guys walking around loose, it would appear there's no other means to make the system work. It has been the position of the organized firearms owners for as long as I can remember that gun laws should be directed at the criminal misuse of firearms rather than restricting the rights of law-abiding citizens. I cannot recall, for example, at any time during the debates over the Firearms Protection Act on the federal level that anyone on our side advocated the abolition of the list of prohibited persons as one of the reforms. Personally, I find it hard to believe that anyone here opposing House Bill 3470 advocates convicted felons, a mentally ill drug addict, or chronic alcoholics should be allowed to walk around packing a gun. Yet without adequate methods of screening gun buyers, this is exactly what happens. Thus, I submit that if it is good public policy to prohibit potentially dangerous persons from having access to firearms, then it is reasonable to give the police the means with which to identify and filter them out of the system. House Bill 3470 does just that. It allows the police to get at the bad guys with the minimum amount of inconvenience to the law-abiding gun owner. I urge you to pass HB 3470 out to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nichols. I believe we have Dean Renfro who needs to testify.
He doesn't.
Doesn't need to. All right, let's let's go on to, appreciate all the testimony from the panel. Let's go on to questions from any members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
We still have everybody out here somewhere. Are they hiding behind each other to keep away from the probing questions of this fine committee?
Everyone out there must be a member of the panel.
Yeah, everybody must be at this point.
But Larry Hill is a major sponsor, though.
Yes.
Let's if we can, just to save...
I won't repeat previous testimony, Mr. Chairman.
If we can, to save time, I'm going to allow Senator Hill to testify prior to questions, and then we'll ask everybody questions at once.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Myself and Bob Castagna of the Oregon Catholic Conference are batting cleanup. My name is Larry Hill, representing District 21, the cities of Eugene, Springfield, and Coburg in Lane County. I'm a member of the National Rifle Association, the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, and I've introduced it in various legislative sessions, bills strengthening the right to carry concealed weapons and diminishing the arbitrary nature of the concealed weapons permit process in the state of Oregon. That's been a serious barrier to the law-abiding gun owner being able to carry a weapon for self-defense or transfer to sport for sporting purposes, etc., or hunting purposes in the state of Oregon. This bill includes the provisions of the bill I introduced in the Senate side, revising concealed weapon law in the state of Oregon, reducing the arbitrary nature of the concealed weapon permit process and making it an equitable process, protecting law-abiding citizens' right to lawfully carry a concealed weapon. I urge you to recognize that the bill is a compromise. It includes parts of that are very, very favorable to gun owners and sports people. It also includes parts that are very favorable in the minds of people who are concealed with the abuse of weapons, and I believe that that is all of us. Gun owners are concerned with abuse of weapons. People who consider themselves anti-gun are also concerned with the abuse of weapons by a few individuals in our society. This bill is an excellent effort to address the problem of abuse of weapons in our society, reduce the level of violence that occurs through the abuse of weapons, while preserving the constitutional right to keep and bear arms with the least amount of restriction consistent with reducing the terror in the streets caused by weapons in the wrong hands. As an individual, I'm not totally satisfied with all parts of the bill, and I'd be dishonest to say I am. There are parts of the bill that could probably be improved if we had another 3 months to work on them. You probably have a week or so. I urge you to study the bill, to make improvements if they are necessary, but please understand this is a compromise effort. It could fall apart very easily, and we'd be left with nothing but the status quo, with which no one is happy. I myself, although I'm a staunch defender of the right to keep and bear arms, I'm a member of the National Rifle Association, I own handguns and I own long rifles, I've been criticized myself for agreeing to this compromise. But that's part of the role of being the legislator, that's part of the role of trying to make decisions to solve problems in the state in a way that benefits the whole people of the state. So I'd urge you to accept the compromise represented in the bill while perhaps improving the language to make it work better and to be more successful.
Thank you, Senator. I believe we have one of the other sponsors of the or requesters of the legislation here, so we'll take Mr. Castagna at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Bob Castagna, General Counsel and Director of the Oregon Catholic Conference. I want to publicly thank Speaker Katz and the members of the group which put this bill together. We think it is an important first step toward balancing constitutional rights and interests. We are deeply committed to upholding the value of human life and opposing those forces which threaten it. We deeply respect the United States Constitution, and at the same time, the unlimited freedom to possess and use handguns must be balanced by the rights of all people to safety and protection against those who misuse these weapons. We think the 15-day waiting period, the criminal background check, the fingerprinting are steps giant steps in the right direction toward ensuring public safety. And while we might have some reservations about some provisions of the bill, we'll look to the sheriffs to oversee the concealed handgun license section. And while we might have preferred that the 15-day waiting period also be extended to the assault weapons, we think that the compromise which the Speaker and those parties participating in the negotiations have struck here is a giant step, again, for protection and public safety, and we'd urge your support of the bill. Thank you very much.
Open to questions. All right. Since I have the prerogative of the chair for a moment, Mr. Hosford, I think you're the first one. I had a question for you. You talked about the fact your organization may or may not endorse this bill. You said you had a pretty good pulse of your membership. Could you characterize for me what percentage of your membership you believe supports this bill? I'll ask that of Mr. Nichols and Mr. Judy as well. Interesting, Mr. Nichols talked about there's a considerable amount of heartburn out there. My guess is there's a lot of people in this audience that have heartburn, and a lot of them are calling my office. But I'd like to know what your sense is of your membership.
68% favored the bill. After it was explained to them, we had a 68% majority that it was in favor of. I'm sorry, 68%. 68% of the membership had no problem with the bill after it was explained to them. 31 individuals in 36 counties. Each county, we tried to reach 31 individuals in each county that we polled.
Can we remind, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to remind the members of the audience, Mr. Chairman, I think we need to remind the members of the audience to keep order.
Members of the audience, everybody will get their chance, and you're going to need to keep it quiet for now in order to keep it orderly. Otherwise, we're going to get out of control, and nobody's going to do any good at all. I'll try to remind the witnesses to speak up, because I know it's a big room, and a lot of you are in the back, and they're speaking the other direction. So if you could try to speak loudly, I think there's a concern over, if you could explain how you gathered the 68% figure, that might be helpful.
What we did is we contacted 31, or tried to reach 31 individuals in each of the 36 counties in Oregon. Based on that information, and after explaining the bill, the compilation of figures ranged at 68%.
So that would have been approximately 1,000 individuals statewide?
Approximately.
Thank you. Mr. Judy?
The Citizens Committee did a much more extensive survey than I did. I did not do a survey. I would estimate that the numbers are about the same, 2 out of 3 perhaps. I got a number of phone calls from individuals, NRA members, who heard about the bill and were very concerned. As I mentioned in my testimony, probably 3 out of 4 of those people, maybe 4 out of 5, 75 to 80%, after they heard about the bill, heard the details, thought it was a very good bill. If I polled our 50,000 members in the state of Oregon, I would probably get 50,000 opinions. But I believe, honestly, that the vast majority of our members would support this bill as it's currently written.
Mr. Nichols?
Again, John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. We did not do a poll. We've kept our members informed in general terms of what was going on without doing specifics of the negotiations, because we didn't want specific language out until we had a bill. Of those members who have contacted me and talked to me about it, those individuals who have contacted me and identified themselves as Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association members, I would say over 90% have indicated that they favored the bill. But again, that's just individuals who have called in and identified themselves as members. There has been no outcry from OSRNP members saying they opposed the bill, however.
Mr. Chairman?
If we could...
You want Representative Dwyer first?
I know Representative Dwyer is here. I think he's on sort of a tight schedule. If it would be all right with everybody present, we'd allow Representative Dwyer to testify and then come back to questions of the requesters and sponsors of the bill. Representative Dwyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Dwyer. I represent Springfield and House District 42. I'd like to try to be constructive in this regard to this bill. I want to give the committee a little background, is that I'm a sportsman. I have been for over 40 years. 45 years to be exact. I also am a collector of firearms. I like weapons. And I was not a part of this discussion. I also represent the Sportsmen's and Women's Caucus in the legislature, which happens to have 48 representatives and senators, and kind of resent not being allowed to participate in this process. I've looked the bill over, and I'll go through the bill, tell you probably some of the things that are problems in my estimation. The last session of the legislature, I introduced several pieces of legislation that were, in my opinion, beneficial to owners of firearms. It remains to be seen whether or not this piece of legislation, as it's finally drafted and if passed, it will be beneficial. I do know some people that benefit from this legislation. The sheriffs benefit. They get more money for issuing their permits. The state police benefit. They get money, funding for a study. The NRA benefits. They take the pressure off of the original intent of this kind of legislation, and that was semi-automatic, AK-47, and all those other assault-type weapons. It's funny that this legislation emanated from some lunatic in California that killed children. And I see nothing in this legislation that would prevent a recurrence of that type of an incident. We look at what the Oregon Rifle and Pistol Association and that kind of membership gains from this. They gain a mandatory issuance of a concealed weapons permit if qualified. What this bill doesn't have, at least I can't find it, is preemption. Is the ability of cities and other municipalities to ban weapons by ordinance. That's not here. So what are we going to do? We're going to have everybody carrying concealed weapons if they want to have a firearm because the local government decides you shouldn't own a firearm. Well, I heard a speaker say, well, what kind of a check is done when they apply under the current law? They have the opportunity to do it. And they also said, well, the law does not require a check. That may be so, but no law prohibits a check. And I would think it was the intent of the original legislation when we have you fill out all these questions and ask these questions about whether you're a felon or whatever, that this stuff just didn't go in the wastebasket, that it was put to some kind of a use. What's this bill do to inhibit the ability of criminals to obtain firearms? I see nothing in this bill that inhibits the ability of a lunatic or a larcenist to obtain firearms. What if Purdy had committed that crime with a stolen gun instead of an AK-47? What were we going to do, ban the theft of guns? Sirhan used a stolen gun to murder Robert Kennedy. Oswald used a mail order gun to murder John F. Kennedy. Marcus Brutus and reputable members of the Roman Senate and his respective colleagues used a knife to murder Caesar. We cannot legislate lunatics. Anyone that's bent on committing suicide and have no regard for their own safety is going to find a way to commit a heinous crime if that's what they're bent on doing. My concern is, what protection do we have for the law-abiding and greater penalties may be a deterrent, but you can't convince me that there are, because there are laws already that make it pretty tough when you use a firearm in commission of a crime. But they still don't deter violence. You know, they say, well, I keep my, I mean, people in, about, in regards to their guns and firearms for the protection of themselves. Well, I want to let this body know that I keep my firearms to remind government that we're a free society. And I think that's the key to firearm ownership and the difference between a democracy and a totalitarian government. And whenever you allow government the process of developing some kind of a database on the ownership of firearms, I think we're marching down a road that I don't like to see this society move, in my estimation. Now let's go through the bill. On page 11, we'll get right into it. We're talking about now providing birth certificates and let me back up just a second here. Let's go to section 2, page 7. We're broadening the concept. We're broadening the statute. We're going from concealed weapons, pistols and revolvers, to firearms. We're talking about anything capable of discharging a projectile. That kind of bothers me. If we're talking about, if we want to talk about handguns and concealed weapons, let's talk about one thing. But part of this section deals with concealed weapons.
Sergeant Dwyer, I think people are having a little problem finding a spot here on the bill. Can you,
Mr. Chairman?
To that?
Yes. With all deference to Representative Dwyer, I see that Representative Dominey is here this afternoon. And I assume that we're probably going to have a further hearing and work session to go through the bill section by section to try to work over the bill. I'd appreciate it if perhaps Representative Dwyer could provide us with an overview as to the bill and then provide us later with comments on specific sections of the bill for our direction.
I'll be glad to. Write my remarks and mark up the bill as what I feel are legitimate concerns of the law-abiding and provide it to the committee for their consideration. But my only goal is that, first of all, I'd like to say, if that lunatic his action demonstrated a need for some controls, I'm not sure that these controls address that question. There are a lot of people that benefit by this, but I'm not sure that it's the guy that does his swap meet or the guy that goes to a gun show or whatever. And if we're really going to get the deal with this problem, I'm not sure that this is the vehicle. And I think that we do have some concerns about preemption. I do have concerns about being able to buy a concealed weapons permit and the sheriff's ability. I'm concerned about the prices, and I'm concerned about the concessions that everybody made to buy off and they get something. And I feel that everybody has gotten something, but like that the last tax measure, they forgot the people. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Bill?
Bill?
Representative Dwyer?
I'm going to have to, if I can caution everybody in the audience, to try to keep it down because we have a lot of witnesses, and if we slow it down, we won't be able to get to everybody. I want to say that as for the section by section, Speaker Katz also has a section by section analysis of the bill that she'd like to present. We're going to save those more specific comments for the next hearing on this bill, and for today at least, we'll try to keep it more general.
I'll provide you those in writing.
I have a question of Representative Miller.
Representative Dwyer, I don't know whether you were here or not, but in a moment perhaps of senatorial sagacity, we had the advice that our role as legislators is to compromise on matters of this sort. I guess I would take it you didn't think this was much of a compromise, or perhaps the principles were yielded a bit prematurely.
Well, it isn't a question of compromise, and I think that there's some things you can compromise on. You don't compromise on the amendments to the Constitution. You don't compromise your religion. You don't compromise your family. There are some things you don't compromise on. It depends what the intent of the legislation was. What was the thing that triggered the need for this legislation? Was it something that could not have been remedied by existing law? Have the authorities had fulfilled their obligation under existing law? And if they had and prevented this person from obtaining that weapon, conceivably was there another method that that person could have gotten that a hold of that weapon? And if so, would that have deterred a lunatic from wrecking mayhem on school children or anyone else? That's the question. And I don't think that this really addresses that problem.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Representative Dwyer, all the members of this committee, I'm sure, share my respect for your ability and your concern. And you and I talked briefly on the floor this morning.
Study shall be presented.
Well, that's 2 years.
That could go
that's
on forever. Next, no, but there's no sunset amendment. Now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question for you is I'm going to ask your advice. I mean, we're sitting here trying to make a decision on a difficult bill, trying to make it better, and we got Mr. Hosford and Mr. Judy, who, as far as I know, are still the official representatives of the organizations, National Rifle Association and the Citizens Committee.
They haven't been impeached yet.
And I guess I'm asking you, you think it would be a little bit unwise for us to get in the inner workings of those organizations? I mean, I'm sure there are members in those organizations that are uncomfortable or unhappy with their representatives. And yet, as far as we know, we've got these two people in front of us certified as leaders of these organizations talking to us in their official capacity. Now, if every time someone comes from an organization to talk to us about the organization's position on the bill, we start getting into the inner workings of the organization, we'd never get any work done. And I guess I'm just asking you for some advice on how we need to deal with the presently constituted National Rifle Association, the presently constituted Citizens Committee.
Well, to be very blunt with you, Representative Clark, I think I'd look at it very simply. I'd say to myself, number one, that neither Mr. Judy nor Mr. Hosford vote in the state of Oregon. Surely there must be some feeling among the committee as to the overflow crowd here today that if the, we'll call it as you said, and I'll change it just a little bit, the self-anointed do actually speak for the firearms owner of this state, then why is this opposition here? Why are we here trying to find out? Very honestly,
that's not my question.
Well, beyond that, I didn't really understand your question. I'm sorry.
Let's, Representative Clark, want a further question?
Why don't I try again?
It's okay.
We're going to hear from lots of people, all of whom are in our districts, all of whom are contacting us, and we're going to pay lots of attention to what those people have to say.
Good.
But in the meantime, we've got two organizations in front of us who historically have been recognized as being strong proponents of the right to keep and bear arms. And I'm asking you right now, are you telling us that because there is some internal disagreement in those organizations that we should discount what they have to say about this bill or other bills that might be of concern to your membership?
I think what you should do, Representative Clark, is ride it out to the end of the ride, not make a snap decision. Let the process of this bill run itself forward. And then over the course of the days, or the weeks, or maybe until the end of the session, if need be. See how the balance comes down. See whether these gentlemen actually speak for the gun owners of the state of Oregon or whether they don't. Now, you ladies and gentlemen, you represent Oregon. That's the only thing you have to be concerned with. Am I correct?
That's right.
Okay.
We're working on it.
Now, Mr. Calhoun, I really hate to keep, but it is vital to speak to just
I want to do
some
it
of the
when you come before my committee, my members of the committee have an opportunity to ask you questions.
Yes.
So we have one more member that has a question, then we'll get on to your four
Thank you.
Comments. Thank you.
Well, it's more of an observation for the guidance of you and for all others. The representatives recognize that we're one half of a two-chamber legislature, and that in that sense we're trying to represent the concerns of all the citizens of the state. It is significant to us when someone representing a large organization of concerned citizens takes a position, not because of the identification of the individual, but because we recognize that the organization has a special interest in that issue, and therefore we assume some reasonable amount of knowledge about the issue. But we often get bills from the governor himself, and we don't say, well, it's from the governor, therefore it must be good. We say it's from the governor, therefore we assume that there's been some study and some knowledge there, and we'll take a good look at it. It is useful to us to know the identity of organizations that take certain positions, because it gives us some idea about how people with some expertise, whether it's real or self-anointed expertise, react to the issue. So we do care about the identity of the organizations, but I want to caution everybody not to assume that because a large organization or a small organization is in favor of or against something that we're just going to stand up and salute. We will look at the merits of the message rather than the identity of the messenger in evaluating the merits of the bill. And I want to assure you of that.
Yes, I certainly understand that, Representative Maddox. And now, I was going to say I can answer your question by just going ahead for the next few minutes.
We have, if you can keep it down to just a couple minutes, that'd be great, because we've got a lot of people here that want to say a few things.
We're going to go.
Next time, we're going to go on a section by section.
We're going to go fast, Representative.
All right,
I'm going to call your attention to page 7, section 2, which is the section where lines 35, 36, and 37 are being taken out of the current legislation, which simply says, he who is known to one another. When you go through that, I assume most of you ladies and gentlemen up there are attorneys.
Most of us.
Okay, then I don't have to get into the specifics of this. It boils down to, he who is unlicensed in this state, any one of you gentlemen up there sell me a gun. Neither one of us have a license. You don't know whether I'm, and I'm picking one particular thing out of the A through J quote, you don't know whether I'm a chronic drunk or whether I'm not. But if you sell me that gun and I go out and do damage with it, and then they come back and say, where did you get this thing? Oh, I got it from Randy Miller. Randy Miller has become a Class C felon under 3470. I read it very carefully. Randy Miller has become a Class C felon under 3470 without having been afforded the due process of any way to check whether I'm good, bad, or a bum. Page 7, section 2 is a very flagrant and simple violation of civil rights. We'll go on to page 9.
I appreciate it if we can just touch on these generally.
I'm going to just touch on them generally.
Speaker Katz, I think, has about an hour for us to go through.
I understand. I understand.
We don't have time for them.
I just want to be sure, since mine is not written testimony, Representative Calhoun, I would appreciate.
Please touch on them briefly.
I'm going to touch on them briefly.
Keep the next three down to 30 seconds apiece. So.
Well, I may not be able to do that. Remember, these bills cost us $1,600 apiece just to get to this point, just from a printing standpoint. And this really is the only forum.
Go ahead.
Now you're down.
Thank you.
Now you're down to a minute.
We'll go. We'll go on page 9, numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5, the report of the medical records. I don't have to go into that. You all know that's a civil rights violation. We'll go on to page 10 and page 11, which is the entire concealed weapons permit process. The very fact that you ask $50 up front for this, it makes it a money test. It has nothing to do with performance. We'll jump back to page 17, sections 21, item 1. You're simply trying to, or I say not you, because you are being asked to look at it. but this bill simply tries to reverse a current Oregon Supreme Court decision, that of Kessler Delgado, which has been tried through these courts for 10 years. We go on to section 29, pages 21 and 22. The fingerprinting between now and the year and a half, we've already talked about that, so we can pass it. I say there's no sunset amendment in it. Page 13, section 11, which is the bottom part of the finalization of the concealed weapons permit. It says that you go through the DRU process instead of against 183. It simply says there that you go out and hire a competent legal counsel and go to court. Now, I've talked to several counsels, including my own. I've had the chance to talk to a national counsel who has 800 offices in the United States, and they tell me that it's between, you're looking at between $1,500 and $5,000 legally to fight this thing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Quick comment on that. We're aware that there's a problem with that
okay.
section.
Okay. That's all I want to bring to your attention, Mr. Representative Maddox, because I do not have any of the
right.
current amendments that you have. I'm speaking from the bill that came from Representative Katz's office 3 days ago.
We'll get you
so
a
bear
clean,
with me.
Good, clean procedure on that.
Thank
you. Don't have to get an attorney.
Appreciate it. Beyond that, the only thing I can say is look at it very carefully, because I think we're all being led down the primrose path, and I think you, ladies and gentlemen, or you gentlemen on the committee, and the gentlemen of the, and the ladies of the session are being asked to be the carrier of something that, when the average mama and papa find out about this down the road 6 months from now, 8 months from now, when it takes effect and they go into, in Eastern Oregon to buy a rifle or a shotgun, etc., or something like that, the old rancher over there that goes in at Christmas time, he says, what do you mean I'm going to have to do this? I think when that spreads itself around this state, and when this ill-conceived piece of legislation in its present form, and God knows it would be nice to have a decent form, because we're all for law and order, but if it goes through in this present form, the old adage, the old political adage that says you couldn't get elected to dog catcher is going to become very apropos in this state.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you don't live in my representative district. Mr. Shively, can you just close out here and we're going to get back to the
original. Yeah, I'd like to mention the fact that I am a life member of the National Rifle Association and a life member of the Oregon Rifle and Pistol Association, and I was probably talking on some of these bills up here for the NRA representative sitting back here was out of diapers.
Thank you very much. Any other questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate all you.
Just a comment for Mr. Shively. Mr. Shively? I just want to take off my hat, which is also white, to you for being here for 46 years.
It's the last time, but this is getting nervous.
I'm glad I
appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Where's our minutes?
I'm going to get this gentleman's name.
It's the one on the right or the middle?
The gentleman in the sweater that's going back.
Excuse me.
Ted Dove.
Ted Dove from the...
Yes.
I've got him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought,
what's your organization again?
Oregon Arms Collectors.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer any assistance I can to the committee to make this a very good criminal control bill and not a civil rights, anti-civil rights bill.
Appreciate that, and if you have any specific amendments or any of your friends to the bill, we'd appreciate them in writing if possible. And
in your packet in the colored paper.
Expect to see you next Wednesday at the next hearing. That's okay, we're going to try to get back to the original panel in case there are any further questions of those people. I think maybe it was better to go on since now some of those questions might have cooled off and we'll forget what they were. We have Speaker Katz and the full coalition that developed the bill. Any questions of any of those people?
No.
Mr. Chair, not detailed section by section questions.
Well, I think it might be appropriate, since we're dealing with these people, to do that, given our if you want to do it to a limited basis, but given our time, we might try to get some general comments from everybody. So
maybe.
In other words, you might, if you have a couple, that might be appropriate.
Well,
but if you have
we are going to be walked through the bill section by section at some
next
point
time around
by the proponents.
Doing it.
Okay, I'll wait then.
I have a couple of generals.
Representative Miller.
Just maybe Mr. Judy. I would want to comment, Mr. Chairman, that a couple of days ago after some questions on the floor, I was told by the speaker I got away with murder in the way I presented my questions, and then today I'm branded as a Class C felon, so I guess things are getting better.
Tomorrow?
Mr. Judy, just so I can get a sense of where you are on this bill, I think for years you've tried to get through portions of this measure in this legislature, and you've had to, as I understand it, yield a considerable amount in order to, in exchange for the concealed weapons permits. Do you feel good about the state of this compromise, about the bargain you have struck, or do you just feel that this is about as good as you can do in Oregon?
I put together a list of what I felt were the good points on this bill and the bad points, and I believe in light of all the considerations, the federal legislation which is pending, the study, the benefits far outweigh the costs. And personally, I wish I could live under this bill. But being from California, that may be talking apples and oranges, and it's irrelevant. But I feel it's a good bill.
And one other question. Sense of the effectiveness of gun control legislation in general. It's my impression, I really don't know what the state of the law is, but in Washington, D.C., it's my understanding they have rather strict gun control laws. How are they doing there in controlling their crime with respect to the use of firearms?
Not very well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Any other questions of the original group?
Mr. Chairman, Brian Judy again, if you don't mind.
You might just want to stay up here in case it keeps going on.
Mr. Judy, I appreciate Representative Miller's questions, specifically referencing Washington, D.C. Speak up?
Yeah.
I'll do it. But I'm curious as to whether Washington, D.C.'s crime control or gun legislation deals with the mentally ill. Are there any checks or balances that currently would screen out people who are unstable from being able to possess handguns in Washington, D.C.?
No, to my knowledge, of the 20,000 gun control laws in effect on the state, local, national level in this country, that is a major pitfall. And it's one of the fallacies of the waiting period issue up to this point. Waiting periods are never going to screen out the people who are mentally disturbed because of the privacy and the confidentiality of the reports of the individual's condition.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, follow up. Mr. Judy, doesn't this bill begin to at least take a first step in Oregon to do something that traditionally hasn't been done in the past and to try to screen those people?
It does, and it's one of the major sections which we believe is extremely important in this bill. We feel that being able to identify the people who are mentally disturbed, such as Patrick Purdy, is a great step. I don't think there's a person in this room, whether they oppose or support this bill or could support or oppose it in another form, that would not agree that people like Patrick Purdy should not be able to get guns.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, another follow-up question. Mr. Judy, wouldn't you suggest that it's the nutcases across this country that create a very bad reputation for handguns and rifles that are putting legitimate gun owners in jeopardy of losing any right to own a handgun? And isn't that the controversy? And I guess in looking at the bill, seems to me that the bill takes a very bold step in beginning to cut out those people who are the mentally ill and the problems that are creating the problems for those legitimate gun owners. And it just seems to me that it's a fairly bold step, but it's a prudent step.
Absolutely. It's a very small minority of the people that ruin it for everybody. I think that's true in almost with respect to almost anything. And it's certainly true with respect to the firearms issue, and that's why we support specifically strongly, very strongly support that particular section in this bill.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, another question.
Yes, Representative Minnis.
In regards to the confidentiality of the information that the state police would obtain, now, do I understand the bill correctly in understanding that they're not going to compile the information to share with other law enforcement agencies for the purpose of controlling guns or identifying who owns guns and utilizing it for law enforcement purposes, per se?
Are you talking with respect to the information regarding fingerprints or the information on the confidentiality, the information from the health division on mental?
Well, let's talk about all of the information that can be compiled, even the application form.
The major concern, which has been expressed to me by gun owners regarding the fingerprint, well, the thumbprint is a major concern, and the concern is, as I think Mr. Hosford mentioned, the distrust in government, and that the state police was going to compile a centralized list of gun owners, and there is a section in this bill which specifically makes that unlawful.
It makes it unlawful for the police to do that?
Yes.
So there could be criminal prosecution against the police for doing that?
Yes.
Isn't that correct? That's a pretty bold step too, isn't it?
I believe so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee?
I'd have just one before we get on, and there's a number of others when we get more specific in the bill I'm going to have for somebody, and I'm sure other people will also. It's kind of a general matter. We're, for the first time for a concealed weapon permit, we're requiring a proficiency test.
It's not a proficiency test. It's a competency. There are two distinctions. Competency, I believe, is, or I would define, and that's how this bill addresses it, is demonstrating the safe use and handling of firearms. Proficiency is the ability to shoot a firearm accurately. And the NRA opposes proficiency requirements. We don't believe that an individual should be able to hit 10 X's from 100 yards to carry a concealed weapon. However, the NRA is a foremost advocate of the safe use and handling of firearms. And we do believe that people should know how to safely use and handle firearms before they are carrying firearms in public.
Just to, in case we don't have you here, because our next hearing on this will be Wednesday of next week at 1:30. In case we don't have you here, I need to know how available are those are the people that you need to go to perform that competency test, and how much does it cost per individual?
Hunter safety courses are one requirement. NRA firearm safety courses are another. We have, I think, about 10,000 instructors throughout the country. I don't know how many of them live in Oregon. I believe Oregon has a state law requiring hunters to take a hunter safety course. And to my knowledge, I have not heard of a problem with hunters finding a course to take. And I believe, I remember when I took my hunter safety course back many years ago, was after I was out of diapers. But it was not very costly.
I think that the hunter safety course you have to take in Oregon, just to satisfy the nodding heads, is if you want to get your license before you become a minor, if you're a minor. So if you want to get your license at the age of 14 or something, you have to take a hunter safety course.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes.
Have you studied the beneficial consequences of these safety courses? One of the concerns I've always had is that we don't seem to have a concerted effort to make sure that people who handle firearms have any have had any kind of formal safety training. Have there been any studies that you're aware of regarding the effects of these safety courses and the resultant reduction in accidental discharge and so on?
I'm not aware of any studies along those lines.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. We're going to, Mr. Nichols, would you have a comment to add before we...
Yes, Mr. Chairman. John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. I would just like to speak to one issue raised by Mr. Dowd. It is true that we oppose the registration of rifles on the national level. We oppose any registration bill that is designed to compile lists of gun owners. We do not oppose, say, a waiting period which is designed strictly for identification and weeding out of prohibited persons. We draw a distinction between the two. In this bill, the state police are prohibited to maintain the records other than necessary for prosecution of a prohibited person.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nichols. I appreciate that. Anything else from the committee?
What we're going to do is now that we're done with the major proponents and the people with medical problems and the representatives, is take a 10-minute recess to allow some of the members on the committee that are moving around kind of funny with a funny little yellow look in their eyes, a break to get out of here. And we're going to come back in 10 minutes, and then we'll begin with Lewis Toley and go right on down the list and give everybody about 5 minutes to come up and let us know what they think.